Whatever you believe in, I think is stupid.
And I think...
Counterpoint.
And anything I believe in is also stupid. So...
M&M's, am I right?
Peanut butter M&M's.
Alright.
I'm ready for you, Joe.
Alright, cool.
I'm so ready for it.
So it's, yeah, tonight we're going to be talking about 8-bit RPGs. And if this goes well, I'm going to do 16-bit RPGs, mm-hmm. computer RPGs, 32-bit RPGs.
32-bit?
Fake RPGs, mm-hmm. Reploop of Gaming RPGs.
Not your grandma's RPGs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll be going over some major series and games, and then we'll touch on some of the smaller games, because I know there's a couple smaller RPGs on the NES that I was a big fan of, but, there wasn't, 8-bit generation wasn't a huge generation for RPGs. I think the prototype phase, and it was the next phase that, in 16-bit gaming, where RPGs really came to their own, which I guess you could say for a lot of NES games.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was a lot of fully matured games on the NES. It was all the form finding itself.
Mm-hmm.
Same way with RPGs. But let's start with the most successful RPG perhaps ever, and that's The Legend of Zelda.
I don't know what that is.
Get out. I'm not even a huge Zelda fan either. I'll get into my thoughts on Zelda.
I know what it is. Oh, Aries said Final Fantasy IX.
Mm.
Hey viewers,
we'll be getting into
it's not 8-bit.
We'll get into the Zelda series right now. So the original Legend of Zelda released February 21st, 1986 in Japan.
I was 3.
Yeah, I was 5.
I was not born.
Yeah.
not even close.
I was unplanned.
Yeah. One day, in the far future, Jen would find out about The Legend of Zelda. That's stupid.
Actually, I played it on my freaking Wii. I played it originally on the N64, and then at my Aunt Tracy's house, and then I played it on the Wii later and actually beat it.
Yeah.
Actually.
So we'll get into the particulars of the game. So, made by Shigeru Miyamoto, probably the greatest game designer of all time. What inspired him to make the game was basically the wood surrounding where he lived as a child. He'd go in there and he'd explore it, and he found inspiration to make a game out of it. One day he found a cave in the middle of the woods and explored it with a lantern. So if you played The Legend of Zelda, you know exactly mm-hmm. where that mechanic came from. You got the name Zelda from the life of F. Scott Fitzgerald, of all things. And no big story there. Miyamoto just heard it, thought the name sounded pleasant and significant, and there you go.
I agree with him.
Mm-hmm. Legend of Zelda. Link and the Fairy. Who do you think that inspired Link, the design of Link and the Fairies? Don't look.
David Bowie?
Peter Pan and Tinkerbell.
That's cool.
Yeah.
He's Peter Pan.
Yep.
And the Makes Fairies, sense. Tinkerbell. I've never connected that. Interesting.
How about the Master Sword? What do you think that was inspired by?
I already know the answer, because I looked. Do you know? You know.
Master Sword?
Yeah, what was it inspired by? Pop culture.
Not really pop culture.
That's pop culture. That's old school pop culture. It's OG pop culture.
Well, it's... Wow. I have no idea. David Bowie.
Everything's inspired by David Bowie. Prince Arthur and the Sword and the Stone.
Well, the most obvious one. Okay.
Yeah. It's like, you know...
It can't possibly be that one.
Yeah.
It's like... Do you even book?
It's way too on the nose.
Yeah.
But for a series that... for a while didn't really seem to have a solid timeline. And we'll get into the weird-ass timeline that Zelda developed into. First two games are back-to-back, featuring the same Link. So that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. Especially when we're... none of the other RPGs we're going to talk about have a game that the second game has the same character in it. A few of them follow the same storyline, but even the ones that follow the same storyline have huge gaps of time in between and don't follow the same characters. So,
what are those two games?
Dragon Quest. The mm-hmm. first three games are connected. There's four in the NES for Dragon Quest. Three were connected. Fourth is separate, but each game is separated by huge amounts of time. Mm-hmm. Final Fantasy has just a different story every single time. Phantasy Star, all four games in the series have to follow the same timeline, but the timeline is 1,000 years, and there are huge gaps of time between. And Mother, Earthbound, each game was completely different.
Okay.
As far as they try to tie a loose connection between all three games with one or two characters. Like, you have Gaius being in the first Earthbound and coming back as the embodiment of evil in the second one, and then Porky's in the third one. So it's all tied together by at least one character trying to seam the whole series together.
Yeah. But Mother, we'll get to. But Mother's very interesting in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But going back to Zelda. Supposedly, there's some document in Nintendo that has all the games on one timeline. As I said, we'll go over that. But, you know, it's changed a lot, so we'll just go by what I found on Wikipedia, to be quite honest. One of the most iconic things in the game is the overworld theme, Koji Kondo. Overall, amazing soundtrack, but that same theme just sticks with every single game. An amazing job.
All the freaking Zelda music is so beautiful, every single piece of it.
So I figured at this point we can talk about the first times we played it. I'll start. First time I played it, I hated it.
Why'd you hate it?
I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to go, and this is not a problem that is exclusive to Zelda, but it, you know, in that era of games, they gave you very little to go on. You go around, and you just, you know, you have to do some things that, like, I can't remember anything specifically from Zelda, Legend of Zelda, but I'll pull something completely different. In Simon's Quest, you get a stone, and you gotta crouch facing a wall, and that brings you to the final boss. Nothing in the game tells you to do that. There's a couple small things in Legend of Zelda that do that. I did like the action RPG. I did like the fighting, like being able to block with the shield when you're not attacking. So that was really good. That was a really cool thing to me. I would have liked the exploration if, like I said, there was a little more direction to it. Going back to the game later, I enjoyed it more. But it's far from my favorite in the series. I enjoy it more for, you know, historical reasons than the actual game itself. But that's my first impressions of it. You know, it was a really good kicking off point for a really incredible series.
And this is the original Zelda?
Yes. Yeah, we're going to go into the sequel
when
we're done here.
I never played the original Zelda, but I know that it was gold. Am I correct?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that next,
actually. It's beautiful, and it's gold. And that is my experience. I've held the game. I've never played the first Zelda. Of course, I've seen gameplay of it, just like being a gamer and growing up, but I didn't play it.
Yeah. With me, as with most of the video games I played, I've probably talked about it in the past, where I grew up in a very rural part of upstate New York in a mountain. No cable, and pretty much anything that we had entertainment-wise was sent to us by our family in New Jersey. They sent us a Nintendo with three games on it. Kung Fu, 10-Yard Fight, and Zelda. And I was a very young kid playing it. But exactly what you were saying before, there was no walkthroughs, there was no internet. Just getting the game, there was no Nintendo hotline to call up. If you're playing Zelda blindly, it is an absolute chore to try to figure out what to do. Especially having to blow up a particular rock at Skull Mountain in order to get to Ganon. Different ways to work your way around. There's that one maze through the forest. Like, I kind of have that nostalgic affection for games like that, because I'm like, you really have to spend hours and hours and hours slaving away to figure it out. And sometimes you just figure things out by happenstance.
Yeah.
Talking about Simon's Quest, I've always felt like I was in a minority for loving that game.
Yeah.
But a lot of that stuff too, you found it out just by, shit, I can't go any further. Maybe I should try this.
Yeah.
It made the game a pain in the ass, but when you finally somehow I ended up managing to get to Ganon and beating Ganon. Mara's probably about 5 years old. Really makes you appreciate it, because it might have taken me about 2 years, if I'm not mistaken. Just sitting there every single day, just moving around and hoping I find something new.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
It's interesting seeing how the game industry has come from that, where this era where they gave you nothing, mm-hmm. and today where you get games and everything you need to do has a little dot in the map.
Yeah.
And ironically, I think the game that probably balanced everything the best is Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
It mm-hmm. does just enough to guide you.
Yeah.
But there's so much there that you can explore and find mm-hmm. that's not in the map. Like, I remember when I first played it, like, I thought I had explored the whole map, and there were, like, two huge sections of the map I never even went to yet.
Oh, yeah.
It's, but
yeah. What sections were those?
The ones in the southeast section of the map, mm-hmm. like, I didn't even know they were there. Like, I had gone everywhere, I'd gone right up to the point where you go again, and I'm like, wow, it looks like maybe I didn't even...
Did you find that desert island?
No.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you go furthest southeast, there's a desert island where they take all your weapons away and you have to survive on the desert island.
Oh, wait, no, I did find that.
Yeah. I found it on accident because I'm like, what's down here? But I feel like that game, again, because I'm trying to play it blindly right now so I can kind of... I'm trying to play that game blindly right now to kind of recapture that feeling in the original Zelda.
Yeah.
I don't want to know where to go next. I want to be able to feel my way around the dark a little bit.
I like knowing what to do next.
Yeah, if I challenge you, not that I feel like it'll actually happen, but I challenge you to sit down with the original Zelda and just try to play it without a walkthrough.
No way, I don't even have the time for that at all. I appreciate people that do, though.
And when I was researching this, something popped in my head, and you mentioned it, the gold cart. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's said enough how influential just that decision mm-hmm. was. I mean,
because it made it more than just a game.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I feel like that was the starting point for special editions. And it also made the game seem premium. Not just that,
Absolutely.
It also had a battery save system, which was mm-hmm. not very common on the NES at all.
So it doesn't get referenced enough.
Yeah, like, you know, a lot of games, so there's a battery, there is a battery in the cartridge. You know how, you haven't played it, but when you start it, you can, basically, there's like three slots where you select one, and it's saved there. Most NES games didn't have that. They were all passwords.
Because
it takes, you have to put a battery in there to save it, and that made that extra cost.
Okay.
Nintendo saw this as a system seller, so mm-hmm. they really treated it like it was a premium product, and I really feel like that made a big difference to how it was received. So, yeah, that's The Legend of Zelda.
Yeah.
And we're talking about Breath of the Wild. This is a series that has reinvented itself over and over again. And probably the worst example of that was Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link. I say that overall. To be honest, I like Zelda 2 more than I like the original Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, honestly.
Does anybody, is The Legend of Zelda a good game, the first one? Is it a good game? Or was it the start of the amazing series that it is now?
If you played it now, it's above average. Yeah, depending on how tolerable you are towards older games, it's a great to good game.
Yeah.
Great to good.
Yeah, you could still play that and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... Everything about is designed well. It's a premium Nintendo game. They're almost always that way, except for Zelda 2, because that was not received as well. But it had some interesting little tidbits here about it about the making of it. First of all, and you'll see this a lot as we go through as we talk about how fast these games are being released. This was released less than a year after The Legend of Zelda, January 14th, 1987. So the games were developed and released super quick at this time.
I had no idea about that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
I remember seeing the commercial for Zelda 2. Mm. And again, when you're a young kid, the timeline is completely skewed, but...
Yeah, and I think even the naming was weird. The first was called The Legend of Zelda, and this is literally called Zelda 2.
The Legend of Link.
And they probably wanted to emphasize that the hero of the game is not mm-hmm. named Zelda.
Yeah.
It was named Link. So that's just my idea as to why they did that.
It's a huge meme.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Shigeru Miyamoto was a producer on the title, but he did not direct the game. So he was just overseeing the game. A guy named Tadashi Sugiyama was the director of this game. Let me list off some of the other games he went on to direct. Super Mario Kart, Pilot Wings, F-Zero X. He's also the designer for Doki Doki Panic. What is Doki Doki Panic?
Wow. Super Mario Brothers 2?
Super Mario Brothers 2?
She said it.
I knew that by myself.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, so the only
no bumpers.
So for the record, I was a gaming expert.
It's the only game that he was involved in later in his career that was even close to what the Zelda 2 was the Wind Waker. So so Tsukuyama is a very influential guy. He made a lot of involved in a lot of great games. And I did like this game, to be honest with you. I guess it was more powerful to me as a kid, because I was pretty young at the time, just because it was more a 2D side-scroller, which most of the games were at the time.
I feel like that's the first... Because we actually talked about this in the car going up to Hilux yesterday. What differentiates Zelda from an actual RPG? I feel like Zelda 2 was an actual RPG, because you power your guy up. There's actual experience points. There's actual stamina points in Zelda 2. As opposed to the first one.
You couldn't level them up in the first one?
Nope.
Just the weapons by upgrading, but in Zelda 2, you actually upgrade it with experience points.
Wow.
Yeah, it's...
Is that when the hearts were introduxed? The hearts? Like,
no,
the extra
the
hearts?
Ones.
No, they were in the first one.
Yeah.
Oh, but did you get extra ones?
Yeah, but you...
Wasn't that leveling up?
No, but just getting... So your weapon does more and more damage as you get leveled up. You get... you also have magic in this game, which you can level up and get different spells. So it brought in a lot of JRPG ideas into it. Yeah, I mean, as somebody who liked it, it didn't come together all that great.
I'm ashamed that I don't know more about the original games, because I wasn't alive when they were made.
Yeah.
But...
Well, now you're learning.
Yeah,
I feel
true.
Like I've made the argument in the past that if Zelda 2 was released... Because people's biggest complaint about it is it's a weird medium, because it's overworld map... But then side-scroller blended together. It doesn't flow that well.
No.
It's a clunky game. The enemies aren't that interesting. The actual art design of the game is a little clunky. Yeah.
And even the random battles on the map, they tried to make it seem like you could avoid them when you really couldn't, just the way it was designed. Mm-hmm. It was nearly impossible.
You walk on a grid, so it's kind of like, if they're in your way, you're hitting them.
That's just it.
Yeah, like, you don't have it felt a lot more chunky to move in the overworld in Zelda 2 than it did when you're playing Zelda 1. They made the random battle seem meaningless, because you went onto a 2D side-scrolling screen, and you just turn back around and immediately exit.
Yeah.
So it seemed to be designed in a way to... make you give you an opportunity to level up if you wanted to, but it also kind of took all meaning away from the random battles. So, you know, just a good idea that I just didn't think really turned out very well in execution. This is actually a Famicom Disk System game in Japan. Are you familiar with the Famicom Disk System?
I believe that I am.
Yeah, it's literally what it sounded. It was just pretty much a floppy disk.
Yeah.
So this was a game for the disk system, as was Doki Doki Panic. So they were actually disk systems.
That's pretty awesome. Yes,
games in Japan, and they referred them to cartridge games here. Now there was, like we were talking about, that a slightly different experience system. Obviously, some significant graphic differences. Some very very awful translation and text.
Yes.
There's literally a guy who you go up to talk to, and he just says, "I am Error."
Mm-hmm.
That is so.
Also the name of one of my bands in high school.
Yeah.
Just want to point that out.
Yeah. So.
Very relevant name.
But, Miyamoto, who was overseeing the game, wanted to do something very different with this game, as it was the first one. Something that would, you know, stay in kind of Zelda's DNA as the series went on. Usually it works out great. It didn't work, like I said, didn't work too great this time. Talk about the story a little bit. Story's a bit more cohesive. And I think the reason I liked it is because you had more direction on where you wanted to go. It wasn't, you weren't completely lost. It didn't hold your hand, but it kind of nudged you in the right direction more than the first game did. The first game, let's talk about the story.
Yeah, I have some questions.
So the Zelda in this game is not the original Princess Zelda. I mean, the Princess Zelda from the first game. It's the original Princess Zelda. So in this kingdom, every princess is named Princess Zelda.
Oh.
And
that makes sense. That's pretty cool.
So.
But they have the Zelda that we know and love now. How many games has she been in?
Well, I mean, every game is different.
Really?
Yeah.
Then why is Link the same person?
It's not.
And Link's not the same person. I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
Yeah, you ever played Bioshock and Bioshock Infinite?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, there's always a lighthouse and there's always a man? It's kind of that kind of thing. There's always
Where was the lighthouse in Bioshock Infinite?
Like, remember when they get to the end? This is getting way off track. There's always a lighthouse and there's always a man.
I thought that was just different. No, I thought the reason that I connected was because...
Well, it's just like the archetype. In those games, there's always a guy who has to do something.
Mm-hmm.
In this game, there's always a kid named Link who has to save the princess whose name is Zelda.
The moment when Jen broke, I'm like...
Yeah.
But wait.
So,
I don't know.
Getting back to
this... doesn't add up to me.
So the story's a little weird for me.
Yeah.
So the original Princess Zelda was cursed with a sleeping spell by a wizard who was ordered to cast it by her brother. For some reason her brother wanted to do that, and then her brother was heartbroken afterward. Yeah. And afterwards he ordered that every single princess moving forward would be named Zelda. So Link has to obtain the Triforce of Courage to finally wake her, while the followers of Ganon seek Link, as they believe spreading his blood over Ganon's ashes will mean his return. And the game over screen is actually Ganon being resurrected. So Ganon's not the enemy in this game. There was not really an antagonist in this game.
You know who your enemy is at the end of the game, John?
Who?
You.
Yeah.
Really?
Shadow Link.
Yep.
What the fuck?
Yep,
this is cool as fuck. I played Link to the Between Worlds.
Yeah.
The game over screen scared the living shit out of me as a kid. And that game, that music, I played that game so much as a kid that I remember laying there in bed and constantly hearing the music looping over and over in my head and crying at night. And my mom being, what's the matter? I was like, the music won't leave my head. I can't stop seeing it.
So it's not scary, huh?
So, no, well, just because the game, it's a very patterned game and the music's on loop constantly, that it just kept driving me fucking crazy because I played it for... probably every single day I came home from school after I got it. So I wasn't allowed to play it for a while.
I'm
afraid of me becoming batshit.
It's kind of like Breath of the Wild and you right now.
Yeah.
So they throw a lot of good experimental ideas in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like
that was pretty sick. It makes me want to play it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you want to hear the story get even weirder?
Yeah.
So when you beat the game, you save, for instance, Zelda and marry her.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Princess Zelda you saved in the first game, but the one you just woke up and met in the second game, who was like hundreds of years old and had been sleeping for hundreds of years.
I know you don't know me, but I love you.
So, it's a lot of weirdness in this game. So, I'll talk about my experiences playing the game. I played this game first, actually. I played this before Legend of Zelda. And it was... I had a pretty good time with it. Problem I had was, and this is when I was a kid, was getting Death Mountain. And that's in the middle of the game, and it is as hard as an end level dungeon should be. It really requires grinding, and grinding really didn't work in this game. So that kind of killed it for me, but I did love how, like I said, story was interesting. There's more direction to it, and there weren't very many cryptic puzzles. Although there were some kind of bordering on Legend of Zelda crypticness, but it was a little bit better. They maintained the premium look, like with the gold cartridge. It's also not the gold cartridge with the battery backup. So, yeah, I could see how this was kind of like a failed experiment kind of game, but. I'm glad it happened, because it really brought, like, reinventing itself into the Zelda DNA right away, and I feel like that was really best for the series moving forward.
Yeah.
So I guess you never played it?
I've never played either. No, I haven't.
Mm. Play it tonight.
Makes me want to play it, though, for real. No, maybe, watch a playthrough.
That's a game that I would love to play with you, because I think you would honestly... What's that?
I was going...
No, I think you'd honestly enjoy it. It's got a lot of fun elements to it. It's a fun game to wander around in.
Did you both beat it?
Yes.
You beat it?
I beat it later on in life, though. And I'll admit that I was probably like 25. Because it, like he's saying, it's once you get to Death Mountain, it's at that point I was like, well, I'm done for a while. I'll come back to this in 15 years.
That's a controller chucking kind of moment in the game.
I didn't beat the game until I got Game Genie, and I fucking
Game Genie.
I downloaded it on an emulator, with the Game Genie emulator, where killing one enemy gives you like infinite EXP. So I'm like, yeah, I'm ready now.
Yeah.
And I just breezed through the game.
I love cheat codes.
Mm. Oh, I missed not to get into a tangent about it. Game Genie was so fucking great for that.
One thing about the game that really, I think the enemy you get the most experience from was this little circle thing.
Yeah.
The problem was you had to sit there and it didn't go anywhere. It wasn't a danger, but you had to sit there and stab it like 50 times. Literally 50 times.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't sound that bad.
Mm. It's not fun when you have to do it a few times. Like, it's just...
Yeah.
Like, that's not fun gameplay. Just standing, sitting there, hitting a button a certain amount of times.
No, it's not.
So, some good ideas, some bad ideas, but overall, I think it was... I mean, I think even the people say it was a bad Zelda game, it meant it was a good game, generally speaking.
Just a bad Zelda
game. Yeah. I think it was just a very cumbersome game for them, and I think they just kind of gave up on it. Not to... I can't speak for everybody, obviously, but it's one of those games that I can see a lot of people... just giving up on it halfway. Like, yeah, I can't do this.
Yeah. All right, so before we move on to Dragon Quest, let's talk a little bit about the Zelda series chronology. I'll just run through. I'm not going to go through what the game happens in these games, but I will go through where each game supposedly takes place. So the first game in the chronology is Skyward Sword, followed by the Minish Cap, followed by Four Swords, followed by the Ocarina of Time. And then this is where the timeline splits. So, there are three outcomes of Ocarina of Time. The hero is defeated, the hero is victorious as a child, the hero is victorious as an adult. We'll start with the hero is victorious as an adult. If that happens, Wind Waker is next, followed by Phantom Hourglass, Spear Tracks, and Breath of the Wild. If the hero is victorious as a kid, it's followed by Majora's Mask, Twilight Princess, Four Swords Adventures, and Breath of the Wild. And if the hero is defeated, you get A Link to the Past, Link's Awakening, Oracle of Seasons and Ages, A Link Between Worlds, Triforce Heroes, finally, The Legend of Zelda, The Adventures of Link, and Breath of the Wild. So that makes, so that's, if you care, I prefer to look at each game as like just the archetype, the new setting.
Yeah. I don't really need them to connect.
Yeah.
It's just like...
It is what it is. You're fighting Ganon or you're not fighting Ganon.
To me, it's just, it's a universe and it's like a series of their own timelines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
like everything is its own thing. It's like a different universe almost.
I feel like the timeline itself is an afterthought.
It's like it's comic like books.
Trying
like
to retcon. They have different
storylines for the same characters, like different visions. That's the same thing. It's just like, it's that version of video game.
Yeah, I think it's like what the MCU is doing right now. It's like they're retconning, like, well, this movie's actually here and this one's here. It's like the movie should just individually be what they are. Same thing with these games, should just kind of individually be what they are.
Yeah.
And if you want to draw some kind of parallel to them, then so be it. But.
Yeah.
They do stand alone, though. The good thing I love about these games is you don't have to play one to understand the other.
It's true. You don't.
At all.
The ones that connect, you don't have
to.
Because I played Link Between Worlds. I didn't have to play Link to the Past before I played it. What other games connect?
Let's go back.
Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask do, right?
Yeah.
I feel like Majora's Mask just like that. That fucks up the timeline because all that... Time travel shit is crazy, and that's technically where the timeline breaks, right?
Yeah.
That's what you just said?
The Ocarina of Time is where it breaks, Majora's Mask follows if the hero is victorious when he's a child. And then that leads into Twilight Princess.
Isn't that crazy? That is cool
is.
As heck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, but here's what I don't get. Like, the hero is victorious as an adult, and somehow it leads to Wind Waker.
Where he's a child again?
Yeah.
Or he's just cartoony adult.
Almost every single game has a different Link.
Yeah.
So
we're all different people?
Yeah.
They're not.
There's always a kid named Link.
Can I ask when that kind of started getting explained? Because this is on March 2nd, 2019 is the first time I've ever heard that.
There was a book called Hyrule Historia that was released in Japan.
Obviously, I haven't read it.
December 2011.
So, but it's please. Also,
even the timeline of that has been changed since. So, like, I mean, this, what I said, what I was going
with
this
sucks.
Highly unofficial and subject to change by Nintendo themselves. Mm-hmm. So, just, my recommendation would be, act like they're all different games.
Yeah, that's what I do. That's what really. I do. It's just a cool, fun series. Every game is unique in its own right. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're all fun in their own right, except for Twilight Princess. I really did not enjoy that when I rented it back on, I think, GameCube. I didn't like being the wolf. I thought it was stupid.
The Twilight Princess is my favorite up until Outbreak Breath of the Wild.
Really?
Yeah.
That's the one that Aerie said was really good. I don't know. My first experience playing it when I was younger, when it came out, was not good.
No.
That's it. I didn't like it.
Now we're going to move on to what is, in my opinion, the most influential traditional JRPG series in this game, and one that, honestly, I don't have a ton of experience playing. That is Dragon Quest.
Dragon Quest.
Very, very weird. Let's do an overview of the series. First of all, Dragon Quest was trademarked by a pen and paper RPG at the time. So in the West, it was named Dragon Warrior in the U.S. Dragon Warrior series had 4 games released on the NES in America, and then they gave up.
Yep.
And for a very long time, until they came back on the PlayStation era.
What brought them back?
I mean, honestly, Final Fantasy VII, the super success of that, and that opened the gates for JRPGs, and then Enix was like, okay, we'll give it another chance. And even at the time, there were a lot of people who wanted the Dragon Quest series back, because it took off the entire 16-bit generation.
Yeah.
But, so May 27th, 1986, just 4 months after Legend of Zelda's released, Dragon Quest, the first one, is released. Created by a man named Yuji Horii. Had an idea to focus on storytelling and emotional involvement in an RPG. Jen, do you know who did the art in this game? You're a fan of his. You may not even know his name, but you're a fan of his.
Oh my god, I don't know his name at all. It's the same guy who did Dragon Ball Z Dragon Ball.
Akira Toriyama.
My cousin would be so disappointed in me right now.
I'm disappointed in you right now.
I just don't remember anything. Yeah. For no particular reason, I don't remember anything.
Yeah. It is essentially the first traditional JRPG.
The first traditional one?
Yes.
Yeah, it really came out before Final Fantasy. There really wasn't anything like it.
Turn-based fighting.
Yeah.
It came out before Final Fantasy VII in Japan.
Okay, but it was well before Final Fantasy.
But it was released in America after Final Fantasy VII because...
No, I'm talking about the original Dragon Quest.
Okay, sorry.
So, Dragon Quest was released, I'll go into I'm not sure about the American release, but in Japan, it was released in, before Final Fantasy.
Okay.
It was always held in high regard in Japan, but it didn't, even though they kept plugging away and releasing these games in the NES in the US, it never really got a good foothold here. Which is why it disappeared for quite a while. First 3 games in this series comprise the same timeline, and it's kind of like a trilogy. First game is basic in every single way. Like, when I say this is the first traditional JRPG, it strips away most of the things you'd even be expecting it to have. Like, for example, there's no party in this game, you're just one character.
Mm-hmm.
It's a turn-based RPG with one character. So, that was... there's a basic story with a deep... It gets the backstory a little more detailed because it gets elaborated on future games, but, you know, basic story is a dragon steals a princess and you must save her.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You are the descendant of Eldric. Remember that name. That stays relevant in the entire series, but very much so in this trilogy. It did have a novel ending, though, because when you get to the end, the dragon's called the Dragon Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually decide to side with the Dragon Lord or fight him. Essentially, the
Dragon Lord... Are there different endings?
Yeah, if you choose to side the Dragon Lord, he puts you... basically, puts you to sleep. And the game's over.
Okay, what if you choose to fight him?
You defeat him, you reclaim the Ball of Light, you store light to the kingdom, you banish all the monsters, they offer to be king. The hero declines and sets off to explore with the princess.
So pretty much if you join him, he kills you because he puts you to sleep.
Yep.
And then if you fight him...
Yeah. Basically punishes you if you chicken out right before the final boss.
Yeah.
So, like I said, they had to change the name Dragon Warrior in the U.S. Because of the existing trademark. It was released in the U.S. in 1989. So the Dragon Quest also came out in the U.S. before Final Fantasy came out in the U.S. Final Fantasy in the U.S. came out in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a pretty big... Mm-hmm. It took 3 years for this to come out in the U.S. And actually, as it relates to the releases in Japan, when it came out in the U.S., it was only a couple months before Dragon Quest IV came out in Japan.
Yeah.
So they're churning out these games, but it takes them a while to localize them for the West. It was, like I said, it was a very, very basic template for the JRPG genre.
Mm-hmm.
It was Final Fantasy and Phantasy Star came out soon afterwards and really advanced the game, as did Dragon Quest II when it came out. But yeah, it was I guess all I can say about it is very basic.
Yes, it was.
5 towns and 5 dungeons in the entire game.
That's it?
Yep. 10 spells you can learn the entire game. This, of every game playing today, this is probably the most unplayable one to play right now.
Because it's so bare bones. Yeah. Probably not even fun.
Like, I would never tell you to try the NES game. I know it's been re-released and redone a couple times. If you want to try it out, try one of the re-releases.
Did they change a lot?
Oh, no. I'm not the huge Dragon Quest fan. But
I'm not the huge Dragon Quest fan.
Yeah. But it is a... it's definitely super influential.
Yeah, it was my... I think for a lot of people in the West, too, that was my introduction to the genre.
Yeah.
I had a friend that had that game, and I just would go over his house and play it constantly.
Yeah. It was a... No, it's very important. Like,
mm-hmm.
You can't really tell because of how fast they're releasing games at that point. But Final mm-hmm. Fantasy, Phantasy Star might not exist as they do today because of if Dragon Quest never came out.
Mm-hmm.
It really established a good template, but it did have a lot to improve on. Luckily, these games started doing that very quickly. Like with Dragon Quest II. Dragon Quest II was released 7 months later.
That's no time at all.
Yep.
Was it almost a clone or?
No, there was a bit. The story was a little bit more involved. There were parties, so you had more characters.
That's cool.
The gameplay takes place 100 years after the original, and stars a descendant of Eldric, and therefore
who is very important throughout the whole series.
Yep, and which also means he's a descendant of the hero of the first game. The first game just took off exploring with his with the princess. The villain is a wizard named Hargon, who wishes to summon the demon Malroth to destroy the world. So now we're getting a little more in-depth with the story, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not just princess. Princess is kidnapped. Save her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's 3 characters in this game. So now instead of a party of 1, you got a party of 3. The other two characters in your party are your cousins, so every single character in this game is a descendant of Eldric.
Interesting.
Game introduced the ship... So you have a slightly bit of open world experience, so you can
fly around.
Yeah, go well like an actual like sea ship, so you can travel different continents and stuff.
So you can sail around.
Yep, not the first game to do that because Final Fantasy did, but the Dragon Quest II and Final Fantasy came out very much around the same time. You can actually travel back to the kingdom in the original game. And that's where you learn how to stop the wizard and the demon from... And you actually learn it from the grandson, the Dragon Lord, from the first game. So really intertwined with the first game story in a fairly direct way. Had a much larger world, more items, more spell to use, more inventory space.
Overall better?
Yeah. Like, we're starting to get to the point where you recognize it as an RPG. So it was a huge... Like, as of all the series, of all the sequels in Dragon Quest, this one probably added the most.
Mm-hmm.
It was also considered an extremely, extremely hard game.
Dark Souls hard?
like grind. You have to grind your ass off, kind of hard. Like, you know, or like, yeah, it's not hard enough if you level yourself up enough. Mm.
I used to like grinding. I spent like a whole month grinding Final Fantasy 13. Yeah. Mm.
Game sucks.
No, it doesn't suck.
It does. You're incorrect. Dragon Quest III.
You are incorrect.
Different day. Different day.
Definitely does not suck.
So Dragon Quest III, final game in the original trilogy, came out a little bit more than a year after the after two. So they took some time with this one. In the U.S., it was released in 1992, a year and a half after Dragon Warrior II.
Also, my birth date.
Yep. The
Birth year.
Say? You and Dragon Quest III.
Mm-hmm. Gameplay-wise,
it was non-linear right off the bat, so you can basically just go off to where you want to go from the start of the game. It allows you to swap your player character in and out of the party, so you don't have to. You have a bigger party this time, to the point where you can switch characters out, and you don't have to be stuck with the one character all the time. So you.
How many people?
Let's see, how many people? Did I write that down?
Four or five.
Yeah, if I get to an exact number that I wrote down, I'll tell you, but I think that was about right. There was a day-night system, which certain items and characters are only usable at certain times of the day.
That's cool, mm-hmm. I like that a lot.
Class system, that's a first. Not a first, it was released after Final Fantasy where that system was introduced, because in the original Final Fantasy, you can choose the classes at the beginning mm-hmm. of the game. The story in this game I found very interesting. Dragon Quest III starts off in a different world, completely different world from the first two. And the map strongly resembles the Earth. And even towns that sound similar to where they are on the map, like Rome, where Rome should be, is called Romilly.
Okay, so it's very mm-hmm. similar to the Earth.
Yep.
Is any of the gameplay kind of... Does it mirror any real events that had happened?
No, it's still in a medieval setting, so okay. It's still a little weird. The hero in this game, you can choose whether it's a man or a woman. So,
it was in 2019.
Yeah. It's the child of Ortega, who attempted and failed to kill Baramos, who is trying to destroy the world. The hero then goes on to kill Baramos, but after that, Zoma reveals himself as Baramos' master and the real final villain. Zoma opens up a portal to the Dark World, which turns out to be Alefgard, which is the kingdom from the first game. Yep, Alefgard. A-L-E-F-Gard. The hero collects a bunch of artifacts that were used in the first game and defeats Zoma, and is given the Ball of Light from the Dragon Queen. He is given the title of Eldric and leaves behind his sword and armor for his descendants to protect the world before disappearing. So this was a prequel to Dragon Quest I and led to Dragon Quest I and 2.
Ah, what a twist.
Yeah. And Night Shyamalan here.
Yeah.
In the
Night Owl Garden.
Yeah.
Is it your cousin? Your nephew?
I don't know.
Me either.
So then... It kind of went the Final Fantasy route. Dragon Quest IV with its own individual mm-hmm. story. So released...
So the first three were continuations or yep. connections. Fourth one, totally different universe altogether.
Yep.
Got it.
Released 2 years after 3 in Japan, so they took a long time with this. And then 7 months after 3 in the US, so they shoved it out pretty quickly as the NES was dying.
Mm-hmm.
Did have continue to innovate the game from its predecessors. Game includes an airship. That's warp point, so you can quickly go to different areas of the world without traveling to it. It included, and this is the coolest thing that didn't really stick around, but I wish it did because it's a big part of what my favorite RPG of all time. It introduced an AI system called Tactics, allowing the user to tell certain characters in the party to prioritize damage, healing, whatever the player specifies to kind of speed up combat.
Mm-hmm.
Game is split up into 5 chapters, the first 4 of which focus on one of the hero's companions. And then the 5th chapter is for the hero. Once they all meet up, the hero's town is attacked by monsters led by Zaro the Manslayer. One of my favorite names I've ever found out in any game ever.
Zaro the Manslayer?
Yeah. And it's P-S-A-R-O. So, Pusaro the Manslayer. The party, after meeting up, follows Sorrow and find that he is working for the awakened ruler of the dead, Estark. They find through dreams that Zorro hates humanity due to the death of his girlfriend Rose and vows to become the next ruler of evil. The party travels to Nidiria, the world of evil, defeats Zorro before he can evolve into the next ruler of evil. This was the worst-selling game on the NES and in the family.
Ever?
No, just in the series.
Oh. You said this came out right before the SNES, correct?
Yeah.
I've never played this one before.
Yeah. I've seen it before. I've never played it. But
I remember seeing the box art at KB Toy, and I think SNES was already out at that point.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like nobody was really paying attention to anything new that was getting released on the NES.
There were a number of, like if you look at the games, very good games released in the last years of the NES, but nobody's paying attention because everybody jumped on Genesis. Everyone jumped on Genesis already or was going on SNES because Genesis was out for a couple of years before the NES. Mm-hmm. So even before it came out, people were jumping ship from the NES. So it was one of a handful of good games that really got lost at the end of the NES generation. And that's it. I mean, these games were not popular in the US.
No.
Super popular in Japan. I think it was more so than Final Fantasy in Japan.
More popular?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, that kind of does make sense to me, especially with the artist being so popular in Japan as well. It's kind of like that team of people knows what to do, knows how to make good content, and people have a little bit of loyalty to it.
Yeah. I do like the way they're consistently improving their games, too. I think there's a reason why, you know, people still expect the new Dragon Quest game that comes out to be really good. And at this point, everybody's like kind of side-eyeing Square when a new Final Fantasy game is released. Because, I was just joking about Final Fantasy 13. That's very, some people love it, some people hate it. 15, same thing. 12, to a lesser degree, same thing. A lot of people love 12, but there is a vocal minority who hate 12. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Dragon Quest, I think, has been more universally loved, at least in Japan. And I think recent times here, because I know Dragon Quest XI just got released.
Yeah, and apparently it's when did it get released?
I think recently. It was last year, I think.
I saw it at PAX. It wasn't released yet. I heard only good things. I haven't heard anybody complain about it.
Yeah. Never really was my thing.
I never played one Dragon Quest game, let the record be known.
Pure nostalgia for nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, it's a series that was too important not to talk about, even though I've barely played Dragon Quest 1 or Dragon Warrior, whatever it was called. But, that's Dragon Quest. Really, probably made the games we're about to talk about next possible. Next game we're going to talk about, Final Fantasy.
Thank God, because I've actually played a lot of the Final Fantasies. Yeah. So
we're just going to talk about one because it was the only one released in the U.S.
Okay.
Well, I mean, have you, well, a serious question. Have you played Final Fantasy 2 or 3? And I'm not talking about the Super Nintendo ones.
No.
Nearby. I have Final Fantasy 1 plus 2.
Aren't they Japanese only?
They've been re-released.
Okay. I've only played
technically
5 and 6.
5 and 6, yeah.
Cuz I played technically 5 and 6.
I own 1 and 2 together on the Game Boy Advance, which are kind of remakes with upgraded graphics and a little upgraded gameplay. And I know Final Fantasy 3 was on DS, and that was, I feel like that is more known in the US cuz that was a pretty big DS release. But that game is completely remade, so
okay.
It's like the Resident Evil 2 that just came out as opposed to Resident Evil 2 on PlayStation.
Okay.
But yeah, Final Fantasy is an interesting story when they were making it. So it was created by Hironobu Sakaguchi. It was originally intended to be called Fighting Fantasy, but because of copyright issues, they renamed it to Final Fantasy.
Fighting Fantasy.
Yeah. That'd be so silly. It sounds like a fighting game.
It sounds like what your parents like asked the guy at the video game store. Like, I think my son wants Fighting Fantasy.
Yeah. Can I get that game at kids playing Fork Fight?
Fork Fight?
Fist Fork?
Fat Kids?
Oh, yeah. It was renamed to Final Fantasy, Partly because if the game was a failure, it was the last game he and Square would ever make, because Square itself was in bad financial situation at the time.
Is that why they merged with Enix?
No, that happened a long time later. Although Sakaguchi was involved in that too, but we'll be not really relevant to here. But Sakaguchi had been lobbying Square to make a fantasy-type RPG, but it wasn't until the success of Dragon Quest that Square finally allowed him to make it. Akitoshi Kawazu, who was one of the developers on the project, was heavily influenced by Western RPGs, which at the time were pen and paper or like computer RPGs.
Yeah.
So he brought those ideas into the battle system. So this is the first game to have like enemy weaknesses, like this enemy is weak to fire, this enemy is weak to ice.
That was the first game to do that?
Of JRPG.
That's cool.
Yeah, because obviously he took the inspiration from these other games, but as far as JRPGs goes, this is what introduced that.
Which is honestly what really makes turn-based fighting interesting, because certain enemies have certain weaknesses and advantages, and they can absorb certain powers. So that's powerful for an RPG, because that really paved the way for the rest of how other ones are being made.
Yeah, and that combined with you being able to select the character classes right off the bat really gave you different ways to play the game.
Yeah.
Like that's cool, it's there, but like if you want to try to go with a brute party with like three attackers and one healing magic,
it changes the way the game is played, so you can really switch it up.
Yeah, so a lot of depth to this game. I'm of the opinion actually that Final Fantasy, at least of the four major RPGs in this era, which I'll say is Legend of Zelda, Dragon Quest, Phantasy Star, Final Fantasy, it's probably the weakest if you take it at the game as it was when it was released.
Yeah.
Because graphics were very basic. It introduced some cool things with the battle system, but I feel like there was a lot more impressive stuff going on in the rest of the RPGs, but obviously it grew into something much bigger in the future.
And it's still popular. Oh, especially in Japan. Yeah. People love Lightning, so...
Stop it.
Final Fantasy 13 is not a bad game!
Sucks!
You suck!
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should ban lies from your podcast.
Ban lies?
Final Fantasy 13 is a good game.
It's a good game. I enjoyed it, therefore it's a good game.
Good game to you. I will grant you that.
Yeah, exactly. Mm.
So, Akitoshi Kawazu was also the one who fought for allowing the player to change to select the classes at the beginning of the game. So Sakaguchi gets a lot of credit, as he should, but Akitoshi Kawazu made some decisions in this game that really influenced JRPGs immensely moving forward. Final Fantasy released in Japan December 18th, 1987, and in the U.S. in May 1990, so 2.5 years it took to get to the U.S., before its release in the US, it was heavily hyped. I still remember
in
that.
In the US?
Yeah. It had its own Nintendo Power Strategy Guide, which I used to have.
Mm.
So, yeah, Nintendo was really fighting to make this a big game, and it was. Apparently not big enough to get 2 and 3 brought over. but, I mean, it came out in 1990. That's pretty late in the NES lifespan.
Yeah.
And it took them 2.5 years to get it here. Who knows how long it would have taken.
It's because they had to convert it.
Yeah, there were a couple issues. Yeah, they had to, like, translate it and convert it. And the hardware in the Famicom is actually different from the hardware in the NES. So there's probably more in-depth localization to do on that front. But also, like, the Japanese companies didn't believe that RPGs could be successful in the U.S. at the time. And even throughout the 16-bit RPG generation, it didn't change their mind. It took Final Fantasy VII to change their mind.
That's why we got Mystic Quest.
Exactly.
That's a different day.
Yep. The story of this was actually a little more cool than I remember.
In what?
In Final Fantasy.
Okay, the original.
Yeah. So it starts with the appearance of the four Warriors of Light, each holding a darkened orb of light. They were arrived at the Kingdom of Canaria, and were asked by the king to rescue the princess from Garland in the Temple of Fiends. So this is the part of the game I remember 100% because I sucked at this game so much when I was a kid. I would redo this section over and over and over again, and then I would cross that bridge and die quickly. But yeah, once you defeat Garland, you save the princess, King rebuilds the bridge, you go to the rest of the world. You go to a pirate, you get warriors get a pirate ship in a town named Beak, which is where I usually, with my endpoint usually, I can never defeat those fucking pirates.
Oh, fuck those pirates, yeah. Though.
They use the ships to complete a series of quests that culminate with opening up the inner sea to the outer ocean, allowing access to the rest of the world. Then they defeat the Earth and Fire Fiends and gain access to an airship.
I love that they still call them fiends to this day.
They use the airship to read the Northern Continent and have their classes promoted by the first appearance of Bahamut, the King of the Dragons.
Bahamut?
Yep.
Bahamut?
Yep.
Bahamut?
Bahamut?
Then they go on to defeat the Water and the Wind Fiend. This is where the story gets kind of cool. With the four orbs restored, the heroes return to the Temple of Fiends and find a portal that goes 200 years in the past. There they find the Archdemon Chaos, who was formerly Garland, the first boss in the game you beat.
Neat.
The Fiends had pulled Garland to the past to create themselves, creating a time loop in which they would all live forever. So they pull Garland to the past, Garland creates them, he sends them to the future, they get killed, they go back to the past, he creates them again, you know, whatever.
As wow. You do.
Yep. The warriors go back in time, they kill Chaos before he can recreate the Fiends, and the Paradox, but when we return to the present, they can't remember what they did, and neither can anybody else, but the world is saved, the lights
are light,
and that is Final Fantasy. So, I touched on it a little bit, but I'll go with my first experience playing it. My parents got it for me for Christmas. I tried like hell. I think it's this game's credit that I tried as much as I did.
To beat it.
Because usually when I play a game that I'm running the wall this hard, I give up pretty quick. But I kept on trying with this game. So I think kid me knew there was something here. And it's probably why I returned to it so eagerly once I got back into RPGs when I was older. But yeah, it was all these games we're playing, we're talking about, well, they're primitive, but they're still good.
Yeah.
And if you haven't played the original Final Fantasy, get one of the remakes. I mean, Square was releasing all these games on anything they could possibly can. You could probably play it on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's worth it.
Yeah.
Is it on the mini NES that we have?
I put it on there.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a fantastic game.
It really is fantastic, huh?
Yeah.
It was so unique for the time. Realistically, I played it because I was told by somebody at the toy store that if you like Zelda, you'll love this.
Wow, I couldn't be more off.
I think they pretty much looked at it like, hey, fantasy, that's great. You might as well have said about the Willow game.
Hey, it's a video game that is in sports.
Yeah, got a special guest coming up.
Oh, Sean and May here? Mm-hmm. Everybody say hi to Sean and May.
Resident Wieners.
Resident Wieners. I should adjust the camera.
Yeah, we're going to start with Phantasy Star, which, of all the games we're going to talk about tonight, is probably the one that's most playable right now.
It's Final Fantasy is not playable.
Even worse than that is Dragon Quest, the original. It's so basic. But
Basic bitch.
Phantasy Star was released in Japan on December 20, 1987. It was only 2 days after Final Fantasy. It was Sega's attempt to move their Sega Master System. And obviously what they intended to do didn't happen because Master System failed. But at least this game was kind of ahead of its time. It had better graphics, better gameplay, I think better music than any other games that came out in this time frame. It actually took place with a setting that melded future and medieval tropes. It's in the future, it takes place on three planets in the Algol star system with Basila swords and interacting with
was
all
that
the
like
other
a really was that game pretty long? Not as much longer
I think than the other games.
Alright. I just have a memory of it being this game is so epic compared to all the other ones.
Too epic.
Here's what made it seem long. It required an incredible amount of grinding right off the bat. To the point where if you leave the first town and try to go do the thing you're supposed to do right away, you're going to die immediately.
NES games. Well, 8-bit games, not NES. But.
Yeah. So the story of Phantasy Star takes place on the planets of Palma, Motavia, and Azorius in the Algol star system. King Lassik rules all three planets, and he's ruled the planets fairly for a long time. But as he gets older, he becomes seduced by a new religion that has sprung up that promises immortality. So
Scientology.
Is this one of those games where the last boss is God?
Not every game.
Every Japanese RPG is always like, P.S. kill God.
Yeah. Kinda, like,
Or P.S. you are the God.
Yeah,
you
got you.
The religion is rumored to have been spread by priests who come from outside the star system. So as soon as he gets into all this religion, he changes, he starts levying outrageous taxes, causes business to crash on the planets, towns become deserted, monsters start appearing, resistance springs up. Game starts as Nero, a member of the resistance, is murdered, and he passes his sword along to his sister Alice, and asks her to seek out the legendary warrior Odin and continue the fight.
Odin.
So all that shit happens. So this, right off the bat, it has a more involved backstory.
Well, I was going to say, compared to every other game that was out in that era.
I know, like, we haven't even started the game yet.
That sounds more like a young adult novel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, fortunately, from this point on, the game is pretty straightforward. Alice saves Odin, who had been returned to stone by Medusa. He's just throwing a lot of shit in here.
Also, Medusa's in it.
Yeah.
And then Superman.
We're in outer space, and Odin's here, and Medusa's Medusa. Yeah.
And now we're going to get...
Her name is Medusa.
Now we're going to get into blatant fan service, because then they team up with a character named Meow, a cat-like creature. And Noah, an Esper, track down and kill King Lassic on Palma.
Oh, see, that was a different kind of fan service than I thought we were going. Yeah. I'm like, there was NES anime.
Well, she's a little
chesticles
sexy
in there.
Yeah. You can almost
actually. I do have. Mm-hmm. I have a thought for that later. Yeah. Now that you made me remember.
But believe it or not, King Lassic isn't the final boss. They find that he was possessed by the Dark Force.
Of course.
And the Dark Force flees to Mutavia, attempts to possess the governor there. Alice and the group track him, kill it, ends the game. But the timeline actually continues in the next three games until the end of the series. But
It's forever, all continuation.
Ever, yep. Mm-hmm.
I played Phantasy Star Online.
Interesting.
You played Phantasy
Star. I played the even odder, I don't even think I even remember it, Phantasy Star Online Card Revolution.
Yeah, I remember.
It was a GameCube MMO, where it was, instead of doing MMO battles normally, you made card decks. So it was a card battling MMO. And it failed.
We don't know what we are.
I bought the GameCube modem exclusively to play that game.
Online, to play it online.
Yeah,
I had the PlayStation modem, and I never played anybody because I didn't know how to work it, or nobody was on.
Barely any games supported it. It was like Twisted Metal Black and maybe one or two other games.
What else?
It was created by Kataro Hayashida and Yuji Naka. Yuji Naka is a big name there. Mm-hmm. He's the main programmer for the Sonic the Hedgehog series and Sega Genesis. Ooh, creator. Really?
Did he also do, like, Outrun stuff? Like
I think he was a programmer for that.
AM2?
Yeah. No, that was
Yu Suzuki. Oh, okay, Yu Suzuki.
But Yuji Naka also did Nights into Dreams on the Saturn, Burning Rangers, two great games on the
Chronicles. Burning Rangers?
Phantasy Star Online, he was part of, and Sonic Adventure series. Fortunately, he was also when Sonic series went really bad.
I mean, the first Sonic Adventure is acceptable, except for the music.
Yeah.
Like, that Knuckles rap song is one of the greatest things. It's like, my name's Knuckles, I'm tougher than the rest of them. I
think that's cool.
No, it's bad. It's very bad.
Sounds cool.
That's why in Sonic Mania, they went back to the classic music. You're here, what's that band? They do, like, 8-bit music. I forgot their name. But there's this band out now, and they do stuff that sounds like Genesis music, basically. And I wish that they'd make a new Sonic game and just have those dudes do the soundtrack, because they already basically play Sonic music.
Disaster Piece?
It's not Disaster Piece. Nah, I'll remember the name later. Anyway.
But the game did have some really cool things. It had first-person 3D dungeons, which for an 8-bit console was pretty amazing. And the console had more colors, better graphics, better music. So if there's a RPG from this era you want to play, I'd play this one. It has a lot of grinding, but fortunately, every single game in this era had a lot of grinding. But it was a bit of a failure, because obviously almost nobody has the Master System. And
I know a lot of people that had it.
Are we talking, like, we're talking in America, the Master System was a failure, but it did okay in Japan, didn't it?
No. It did good. It did okay in Brazil.
How to get a sequel?
Brazil.
How to get a sequel console?
Yeah. I don't know. I think it was in arcades, I guess. That's where they got their money. But that was Phantasy Star. So I didn't play it until much later. But it is a good game. I enjoyed playing it, even though it was very old.
Mm-hmm. When did you play it?
It was probably like 5-6 years ago. There's like this game has been remade. All these games have been remade.
Mm-hmm. At this point.
What made you want to play it? Just because it was a classic?
Because it was a series I noticed in the Genesis, and I never got into it, and I always thought, like, I kind of want to get into it, and when I did, I wanted to get into the original game, so mm-hmm. I started there. It's a good series, like, it faded in comparison to everything that's happened to SNES, but it was a good series.
Well, yeah, Phantasy Star was definitely Sega's, like, hey, you got Final Fantasy, we got Phantasy Star. Yeah.
We almost have Phantasy Star.
Maybe we gotta have something.
Phantasy Star was a way more advanced and fleshed out series than Final Fantasy was up until probably, five. Because 5 and Final Fantasy is where they got really more mechanically interesting with the job system. 4 was really story heavy, but 1, 2, and 3 are just not. There's not a lot going on there. And Phantasy Star, like right off the bat, was trying all kinds of stuff, and then they turned. I'm thinking of a Shining Force. That's what I'd say they did strategy RPG.
That was
Shining Force.
Yeah.
But then they did PSO, and it's kind of weird that they haven't done more Phantasy Star.
It's a shame. I loved Phantasy Star Online. Like that was.
I loved it too.
That was just way too ahead of its time.
Like, I played it on Xbox.
That came out 2-3 years too early, unfortunately. But, I guess I'm glad it's still around, kind of.
I'm sure there's a mobile game for you now where you can do a gacha and all that good stuff.
Yeah. So let's move on to the one game I want to talk about that wasn't released in the U.S. Mother.
Mwah. Of which Dustin owns an original Japanese copy.
Who gave that to me?
I gave it to you.
Prison company included.
I bought it in Super Potato.
And put it in Super Japan. Don't. As much as I will espouse and sing the praises of the Mother series, this is not a particularly great game. despite the storyline being pretty phenomenal, but infamously hard gameplay. Yeah. To the point where most people just did not even attempt to finish it until the later incarnations of it and the remakes.
All right, we'll do have some tidbits before we start talking about the game itself. So, created by Shiga Sato Toy, who did Mother 2 and Mother 3. Mother 2 is obviously Earthbound in the U.S., but this game was supposed to be called Earthbound because it was localized for release and got canceled just because it was way too late in the...
The cycle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it came out in 1989 in Japan.
Nintendo loves doing that.
Yeah.
Like they did with Star Fox 2.
Yeah. So for a while there, like, eventually that localization made it to the internet. Modders finished it, called it Earthbound Zero.
Mm-hmm.
I think a couple years ago it was released on the Wii U Virtual Console as Earthbound Beginnings. So you can play it. I think Earthbound Beginnings is that a remake?
Yeah.
So if you're going to play it, play that one.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Each one of the remakes are made a little bit easier than the original game itself.
You have to dig the Wii U out of the closet.
And, I mean, the fan community around this game is huge, so if you do want to play the original game, it's very easy to find a copy of the translated ROM out there. Not that I would recommend that, because that's stealing and it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's impossible.
Wink.
Yeah. But if you're a criminal...
You hear that, one viewer?
If you're a criminal, you go do that.
Yeah.
The game parried a lot of the game's tropes by, like... just in the setting and, you know, how the story was set up. Like, you know, it's an RPG, but it's in modern day. Mm-hmm. And it stars kids. Kids can't really have weapons. You can't put a gun in a kid's hand.
No.
So it's kind of parodying the whole genre on its face.
I mean, I watched Gundam 0080. Victory Gundam. The Gundam pilot's 13 years old. So,
Kids
can have weapons in Japan.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting at.
If they're max.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's gonna max, not weapons.
But it's interesting in that even though the setting...
Torrent every RPG, got it?
Torrent every RPG.
Well, the setting itself poked fun at the genre. I think what makes Mother so special is that it takes its story super seriously.
Yeah.
So, why don't you tell us about your first time playing it, Dustin?
Well, my first time playing Mother, obviously, I mean... Earthbound was my introduction into it, as it was with everybody else. I found it about Mother way after the fact. Like, I think 2008 that it even existed.
Yeah.
But yeah, the first time I got into playing it was a ROM of it. And as it's infamously told, it's a really hard game to play. It's just a massive grind fest. Very little experience payoff for the amount of grind that you have to do. Mm-hmm. A lot of backtracking in the game. It's like, so if you get to one spot, you might have to walk back to another location that's 45 minutes away. It was more or less made to be kind of arduous and meant to make a long-lasting adventure more than an actual playable adventure.
Yeah.
Like, the way he looked at it, I feel, was we'll make it worth your while playing this. We're going to make it a really long game,
yeah,
and we're going to make it seem like a really arduous journey, but that sucked a lot of the enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, and that's definitely one of the things that... Every generation of games had, RPGs, any games, have their ways to, like, pad the playtime.
Mm-hmm.
And 8-bit times was when they were definitely, like, we'll just make you grind for 30 hours.
Yeah.
Like, the actual game would probably only take, like, 10. But
you didn't have to fight so much to level up.
Yeah, we're just going to make you grind forever just to make it seem more epic, or, like, you had to earn it more.
So that's why in Earthbound, it's either Earthbound Zero or Earthbound Beginnings, one of the two remakes... The first item you get allows you to double up the amount of EXP that you collect, like, right out of the gate, and it's, like, in the first room of the game. And it's, you know, it's...
That's like them admitting it.
Well, yeah, and that's... It makes it a lot more of an enjoyable experience. Plus, they also... One of the things that was a problem with the first game is the fights were all over the place. Like, the second you walk out of your house, you're in a fight. Go a few blocks down the street, you're gonna fight.
The random encounter rate
was through the roof in that game, and it's something that a lot of people complain about. So with the remakes with that one too, they kind of cut that down by half.
As they should.
They try to make it a little more enjoyable just to walk around and explore the game. Because part of, like, not to get into Earthbound, what that made that game, or like Mother 3, so enjoyable is the exploration factor of it.
Yeah.
You know, walking around, seeing the people, seeing the different sites, meeting the community of people in the game that you're playing, where with Mother, it's like you couldn't breathe without hitting somebody.
Yeah.
That's interesting. This probably affects more of the whole 8-bit generation, but we're talking about, like, the game industry is obviously a lot smaller at this time.
Yeah.
We're talking before about how these games are being churned out, multiple games coming out in a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this affected every single game, no matter what the genre came out. And I feel like there was a lot of game padding in this generation.
Mm-hmm.
It was either in RPGs where it's a fucking grind fest.
Yeah.
Or in a game like Mega Man where they just make it hard as fuck. So you have to replay the same thing over and over again.
And then there's like something like Simon's Quest where it's just very vague.
Yeah.
Well,
so it takes a long time
earlier,
to just wander around forever. Or like Zelda 2 is like that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was, I guess that's just the way this is affecting the RPG thing. But I guess that's a good aspect of how the industry grew, is that they actually make these games full of more interesting things and not just...
It wasn't just, here's a random encounter because we got to make this game longer. You spent the money on the game, we got to make it last. So here's an hour-long adventure to get nowhere, and you're going to fight 50 people along the way.
An hour-long adventure where you fight a rat. For three days.
So that
you're strong enough to fight a snake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it took a long while to get rid of that super, like, all those random battle. Like, you have too many of them. Like, there's a game on PlayStation called Beyond the Beyond. Like, like, three steps, random battle.
Beyond the Beyond, the first RPG that Sony allowed to be localized for the PlayStation, as they thought that Westerners didn't like RPGs, so they weren't going to release any.
Yeah.
This is going to get a little tangential here, but at what point do you think the Japanese realized maybe the Americans do like RPGs a little bit? Because I feel like every single system has that mindset of, they're not going to get it.
It's Final Fantasy VII. Yeah.
It was 7, although it's weird because there were, I mean, I guess I don't know sales numbers or anything, but Chrono Trigger felt like a pretty big success.
Yeah.
I feel like it was. I feel like they should have realized it earlier.
Yeah.
I think it just, like, maybe kind of racist here, but I think Japanese people can be very conservative and stuck in their whole mindset.
Yeah.
So it took a massive success, like Final Fantasy VII. Like, Final Fantasy III and Chrono Trigger were really big games, but, you know, Final Fantasy VII dwarfed them. It took a lot to really shake them out of that. And even then, like, it still took a while for them to get, like, good translations, because they released more games with very poor translations.
Seven had a horrible translation to begin with.
Yeah, so, and it took a while before we started getting decent translations.
Yeah, because, even, like, the Super Nintendo translations were just very plain.
Yeah.
Actually, it's funny, though, I would say Seven has a worse translation than most Super Nintendo RPGs.
Oh, yeah.
Because they just straight up messed the plot up at some point.
Yes.
Whereas Chrono Trigger, it's very plain, but, at least it makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah. It just, you got a lot of awkward phrases from those games.
Mm-hmm. Like,
And Nate Barrett talk like Mr. T.
Yeah.
So.
But, that's, we're talking about the very, very beginning of the traditional JRPG kind of. Those are I think, the most influential games, but, there were some other action RPGs that came out on the NES. I saw a copy of Star Tropics over there.
Nice.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
I still contend one of my favorite games ever made, and I like the fact that there's a lot more fans coming out of the woodworks on it.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those ones that people seem to like forget about it, but the people who played it were just like, Star Tropics is
by no means. By no means is it a pithy or expansive game. It's just
that a classic.
Yes,
no, it is.
It is.
Yeah. Because. Okay. Yeah,
Star Tropics 2 also came out on the NES, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it was Azura's Revenge. Yeah. It was a better game, but just at that, like, another one of those tragedies of a late-bit NES. It came out like right around the same time SNES was coming out, so everybody kind of turned their heads.
Yeah.
Comments say Star Tropic hype, just letting everybody know.
Nice.
Chris is hyped about Star Tropics.
No, but the funny thing with Star Tropics is it's borderline offensive and how pandering to the American audience it was, because everything's named Cola in it.
Oh.
You know, you're a boy named Mikey and you play baseball.
Yeah.
And you're on the... You live in Americola.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's a very... it's a good game. It's simple, it's sweet, but... that action RPG, and I think we just talked about this last night, like, the delineating factors between RPG and action RPG.
I would like to know everybody's opinion on that, if I'm being honest.
Because would you consider Zelda an RPG? I wouldn't.
I would consider... Yeah, I mean, that's
the ageless...
I mean, Zelda has literally nothing RPG about it.
I mean, what is RPG?
RPG is a subset of adventure games, I suppose you could say.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like no role playing element at all in Zelda. Like there's no customization of any type. There isn't even levels. Generally, I would say like the bare minimum is you have to have some kind of stat raising system. The heart, your life goes up, but I don't know if that.
Well, Zelda 2 definitely would be that.
Zelda 2, that has a lot more. That has a lot more stuff going on. But it's weird, because, it's hard to say if Zelda games are RPGs.
In that case...
I feel like I should say it is, but then when logically, I can't find a way to get there.
But that logic, I could see calling Simon's Quest an RPG, because you can upgrade your armor.
You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah.
You can't really level up, but I mean, you can get more health.
You get more health, but it's at the more items you find, you become progressively stronger.
Yeah.
I did agree with you yesterday. Dustin said he considers an RPG, and correct me if I'm not quoting you correctly, but he said an RPG is if you can level up your character, and I agree with that.
Yeah. I don't know about, because I personally, as a person that someday wants to make a game if I stop being lazy... The thing I hate leveling up with a passion.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like a, I don't know. It's just not a useful mechanic anymore, and it's just there to make people see a number go up, and you get a sense of satisfaction from seeing bigger numbers.
Yeah.
Like, why does it matter if the only way you can beat the next enemy is to be level 10, just like they are, so you can do 20 damage, and then the next one's to do 200 damage, so because they're going to do 300, you're not really achieving anything.
Yeah.
Because the numbers are all growing in proportion with each other. It's an illusion that progress is occurring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So why not just throw leveling out entirely?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's. I think the reason the RPGs are classified the way they are is because of this generation, because they were based very heavily on pen and paper RPGs,
yeah,
put into
super
visual
form. Numbers.
Yeah,
yes.
So you really need that.
And it took a while, but it really evolved out of that. Now it's like, I think there's a lot of games that could be considered an RPG. Like, all these open world games are pretty much action RPGs.
We've definitely hit a point where everything... Well, RPGs used to be seen as like a niche thing, and now it's kind of sprinkled into everything.
Yeah.
What did we talk about with the guys from... with the Overwatch today, there's the elements of RPG and Overwatch, even. They were saying...
Yeah, why did they say
like,
that there was
the character classes? Like,
each character kind of brings its own thing to the table.
Yeah, so it's,
and
you
mean,
said, there's definitely...
That's more of something that I would want in RPGs now. Like, I would like if people moved away from level-up systems, instead moved towards more skill-based or like, class-based stuff, where, like, you get to a set of enemies that you can't beat because you just don't have the skill. Like, maybe they're made of iron, and you don't have a guy that can break iron
yet. That kind of comes along with leveling up, though, too, because as you level up in games, you do get extra powers.
Well, that's what I mean. So the
leveling... just get the powers, don't get the level.
Yeah, don't get those.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
that's probably how Zelda is.
And
the
I agree.
Zelda,
yeah,
Breath of the
it
Wild.
Is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe that comes back around to...
Zelda
maybe is an RPG, because I don't want leveling in games anymore, and I think you could still be an RPG without it.
Mm-hmm. I like skill trees.
Yeah, skill trees without leveling up is basically, I think, a way to do it.
Yeah.
No, because
I have an interesting game that might fit that, because I'm playing right now, is XCOM 2.
Mm-hmm.
In that it's strategy, and your characters do level up, but it doesn't really make a significant difference.
Yeah.
What makes the difference is getting alien technology, researching it, using it on your own, and getting your tactics better.
Yeah, I mean, the only like JRPG that I can think of that truly fits the this is an RPG mold that doesn't have leveling up is Chrono Cross. And I don't like Chrono Cross. So it has the best music maybe I've ever heard in a game.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah,
I do not like that game. I don't like anything about it.
It's such a there's such a rift with that game. It's like you either love it or you hate it.
The graphics and the music are great. Mm-hmm. Everything else is bad.
I was genuinely surprised that Kristen loves that game. Yeah. Like, she loves that game. I was, like, tearing up talking about it. I was like, I've never met anybody that's actually loved that game.
The music
she
alone.
She loves that game.
The
and
music
she loves
alone.
Kanye. So.
Connection?
Yeah.
Anyway, so we've wandered out of the bit land.
Well, I got two really good comments that are relevant to what we're talking about.
Yeah.
If you put a level system in Zelda 1, I feel like it could easily be an RPG, even if there's no difference in pathing choices. Mm-hmm. And then he goes on to say, separately, Diablo 3, I believe, had no variation based on leveling path. It's the reason I didn't get it. It was all item-based. So he's saying, like, he doesn't really dig the item choices or didn't follow it as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean... I feel like in the beginning, leveling is just, it was nothing but a gate. Like, Zelda with leveling would just mean that, hey, you can't go to the next dungeon until you've hit the sufficient level, which is just going to slow it down.
Yeah.
The best thing about Zelda is you can run, as soon as you get the bombs, you can go to the last dungeon of the whole game if you felt like it. Now, you do need to level up a little bit, because with such a small health bar... So it's kind of in there. It's like your health bar is your level up in Zelda, really.
Yeah.
But if you're skilled enough, you can get around it still.
Yeah.
Which I think is, I guess, my main point. I would like if battles were more skill-based than stat-based.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should be able to... Like, the thing I love about RPGs the most is when you hit enemies that are, like, way over your head, but you're able to beat them because you thought of some clever way to do it.
Yeah.
And I wish that games would kind of force you to do that more.
I actually have an interesting game to mention from the NES that may or may not be considered an RPG, but fits what you're looking for, Gauntlet. I played that a ton.
I played that more in the arcade than I played it on NES.
It definitely had the setting, but it was extremely action-based, but it required you to advance more on your tactics and how you approach things, rather. Do you even know Gauntlet?
Yeah, I played it at Yesterday Games.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm aware of it.
I'm aware of it.
I know it exists.
Yeah.
I know what it is,
yeah.
And I've played it for like 10 minutes at
did
least.
Did you play any NES RPGs besides Zelda?
Not too many.
Not too many, yeah. Like, I'm not even... I'm honestly... I had a Nintendo and I played a lot, but I wasn't really into RPGs at the time.
Yeah.
And with us keep wandering off into the future games kind of shows just how how it all the stuff is way more foundational than anything. Like, I don't think anyone would claim any NES RPG is their favorite RPG ever.
Yeah, no.
But with it's just it's all
they're
very
honorable
foundational.
Mentions.
Yeah,
but
there's one
there were the seeds,
There's one game we played that I thought was really great and led absolutely nowhere, and that's the Guardian Legend.
Yeah,
yes.
Guardian Legend is pretty badass.
Yeah.
Now
phenomenal game.
I've never heard of that or
it's a sequel to Life
No,
it's
not a sequel.
Life.
It's a
Life
total
Life
thing.
Life
Force was a sequel, like
sequel to
Gradius.
Yeah. That's right. Guardian Legends was its own thing.
Yep.
And was Guardian Legends based off of an anime? Or was there an anime based off of Guardian Legend?
I don't know. I'm going to
look that up. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Now, the only...
Anybody in the comments?
Zelda 1 had 2 weapon upgrades, HP upgrades, potion, item upgrades. Items weren't forced upon in battle, but they could make things easier, aka like Mega Man. So it has progression like an RPG where you power up.
It is a sequel to...
True.
I
see that.
Good way to think of it.
Guardian Legend is a sequel,
oh?
But I think you just stumbled on it accidentally because it was a sequel to a game released in Japan on the MSX computer called Cardic.
Okay.
I obviously played that.
Yeah.
Obviously.
It also has... I mean, there's some silly NES...
That's such a cool cover.
I know. It's silly, but it's awesome.
Frog Monster.
I think it has anything to do with the game.
To our vast audience, you should look up the Guardian Legends cover. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. But it was like... It was a hybrid shooter slash Zelda-type RPG. You'd have a shooter section. You go to a place. You'd basically go down in a kind of Zelda kind of screen-by-screen area, but you'd shoot things... it was just, it was a
and
really
then you turn
fun
into
game.
A spaceship.
Yeah. Like, it was...
the... Yeah, and I mean, all I can remember from that is the shooter, I never got to, like, the second shooter section in it. Like, you start off in the shmup part, you do your thing, the one thing I remember is it flies by really super fast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, most, you play, like, Gradius or something, and you kind of move at, like, a leisurely pace.
Mm-hmm.
This one literally feels like you're blasting through space. It's very fast. And then it gets to the top-down RPG part, and I think I got to one boss, and then I just never played it again.
Yeah.
But I really liked... I remember liking it a lot, but I was I was young.
Yeah, I think that's as far as I got. I remember getting to maybe the second shooter part, but that's it. Like, at that point, it was already a couple hours in, and probably had to go to bed.
And everyone I talked to about the Guardian Legend kind of has the same thing. Like,
yeah.
I feel like no one really progressed that far in it, but everyone has, like, a really great memory of it.
Mm-hmm.
I went back to try it, and it holds up a bit. Like, I could see myself playing it, and I have a better idea of what I'm supposed to do. But, it's like, I think I got to the second shooter section when I was a kid, and that was it.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about this is that it was developed by a company named Compile, and you would think, like, what kind of games do they make? They probably make shooters. So this was them trying to...
branch out.
Yeah. Like, they made games like Blazing Lasers...
Of course
I think they made Musha for the NES.
Do they still make games?
Do they? No, it looks like it stopped in 2000.
Because there are some...
Textiles.
like Bullet Hell shmups in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that we're not allowed.
Shmups?
Yeah, shmups. Bullet Hell shmups are huge in Japan. Well, not huge, but they have a big niche in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And there are developers that exclusively just make... cover the screen in bullet shooter games, so I didn't know if Kapow was one of the ones that stuck around and still did that.
Yeah, they made Robolust for Sega CD. But
Robolust?
A Lest. But they also...
That game was
awesome. That game was pretty cool. Is that where you fight on the moon?
Yeah, and it's like you move the chess pieces. Oh, I loved that game.
Yeah, I had that game when I was a kid, and again...
That's
another
the King of the Monsters.
They also made, if you remember... Ghostbusters, not the terrible one, but the one that came out in Genesis with the big head characters. It was okay.
I've heard about that one. I've never actually played it.
But they were known for their shooters. But they made a lot of some Puyo Puyo games.
Dragon Quiz.
Yep, everybody loves Dragon Quiz.
Yeah.
Know that one.
For fans of Dragon Quest,
I know that
Dragon Quiz, the educational Dragon Adventure.
But yeah, it's an interesting developer and an interesting game.
Yeah.
I wish it was
the,
successful.
The only legacy that I can think of the Guardian Legend is Way Forward You know, Way Forward?
Yeah.
Yeah. They made a game that basically was the Guardian Legend mm-hmm. on Game Boy Advance.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember the name of it either.
I remember what it looks like. I remember the art style. It didn't get, like, great reviews because the character sprites were, like, too big. So, like, you know, it's a top-down game, and your character takes up, like, a quarter of the screen. So it was hard to see anything going on. But it was the same thing where it was a ship, and then it was a top-down RPG. It was literally, like, their version of the Guardian Legend. I can't remember the name of it, though. But that was a Way Forward back in the day. That's the only thing that the Guardian Legend seemed to achieve.
Yeah.
A not-that-great Way Forward remake.
Yeah.
Well, not remake, tribute.
An homage,
yeah.
Another interesting thing I just want to mention, because it technically is the same type of game as Zelda, and it predates it. It's called Hydlide.
Yep.
But it sucks.
Hydlide is awful, and they kept making that.
Yeah, no.
How many were there?
It was Super Hydlide, then it was Hydlide.
There was a Virtual Hydlide.
Virtual Hydlide.
Sega Saturn, which was garbage.
Oh my god, it was... Ugh.
It's terrible. It's just a bad game. Like, anything you can imagine about being bad about a game is in
Hydlide.
And I got fucking... If anybody wants to look up the cover for Hydlide, you'd see why me and a lot of other kids bought that game.
Does it look amazing?
It looks phenomenal.
Is it cool as the Guardian Legends cover?
Let's see Hydlide.
Let's see.
Oh, my. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, look at that. Of course I wanted that game as a kid.
I remember that cover.
Cool.
Of course I went to Woolworth and begged my mom for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just like, movement was choppy, it was super hard.
Same song.
Yeah.
Over and over again.
Yeah.
Was there any NES game covers that I like looked at and like, I need this.
Draken?
Knowing what it was.
Draken.
I'm trying to think. Draken.
Draken was the game that was like a polygonal fantasy adventure.
On Super Nintendo?
Let's take it. Yeah, it's first person.
Yeah, I remember. I watched you beat that at my house once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I put it on Charlie and Kristen's house the one night. That's when you're like, what the hell is going on? You just go like, whoa, whoa,
whoa,
whoa.
That, right.
I don't
remember
that at all.
Got any,
I'm just going to wrap it up with the 8-bit stuff because We're drifting in other areas because there's really nothing left to talk about.
Yeah, this really shows that 8-bit RPGs weren't that great.
Yeah, this is really a more historical podcast than a go out and play these games podcast.
Yeah.
But I'll just mention the rest of the traditional RPGs on the NES were not from Japan, and they're basically just bad computer ports.
Mm.
Ultima 3, 4, and 5, King's Quest 5, Destiny and Emperor. I mean,
games that
nobody's heard of.
I always get King's Quest confused with King's Field. And King's Field is the predecessor to the Dark Souls games.
Yes.
So I get sometimes I hear King's Quest and I'm like, oh, From Software made that. And no, it's so good. No, my only memory of King's Quest is, you know, back in the Nintendo days, you like getting like the guides or the magazines.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's Nintendo powers on the walls and everything. It was such a big deal when you got those, and everybody wanted to get in on video game stuff.
Yeah.
So companies that didn't normally publish stuff about video games would publish like strategy books where they'd give you strategies for like 20 random games they chose.
Classic book fair.
Yeah, like I
couldn't afford it.
The one I had, it was I can't remember the name of it at all, but it had 10 Super Nintendo games and 10 Nintendo games and like King's Quest like 5 was in there.
Special.
I don't know, I didn't have the game, but I read the strategy section for it.
If I ever play this
thoroughly,
yeah.
I'm going to kick ass at it.
I knew the whole story from that guide.
I don't know why they would even bother. Like, that was a good PC series, like adventure games, like point and click. But, like, I don't know how that translates to NES, and I don't want to find out.
It looked like a pile of, it was just a blob on the screen. Like, everything was so blocked.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I remember from pictures in the guide, never actually played it.
So. Honorable mentions is Capcom's Willow game.
Oh, I never played it.
That was a...
Didn't like the Willow movie.
Oh, well, you're just a horrible human being.
I think if you take anything away from this podcast...
You ever watch Willow?
If you see anything named Hydlide, stay far away from
don't
it.
Don't do it.
Apparently, from,
definitely
from
play
Googling
it.
Hydlide, there's a whole list of hate videos on it.
Nice.
Including James Rolfe and Pro Jared.
Yeah, James Rolfe did the Virtual Hydlide.
Hmm. Yeah. And then here's this one. Is Hydlide that bad? Yes, it is.
Yes. Thanks everybody for watching. There's no one watching right now, but there was.